The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
Hey,
y'all.
Beautiful people. Aww. You're both beautiful people, and I love you. Love the hell out of both of you.
Yeah. I love y'all back.
Yeah. Bailey does not care for us.
No, you guys are great. You're okay. You
can
You're
read fine. It on your face,
it's
Bailey.
Top tier.
Why are you rolling your eyes as you say that?
Top tier. Great. You're all great.
I just wanted to share that I read the longest and most boring play of my life on Monday.
Oh, no.
Without divulging too much, I had to go to the California Court of Appeals in downtown L.A., yeah. And I had to pull all 24 volumes of the reporter's transcripts from The People versus Harvey Weinstein.
Jesus.
Wow. And I had to look through every single one of them to find one specific witness.
And oh my God.
Record all, well, not record, take pictures of every single page that they were on the stand for. But it was just, the thing that made me laugh, and I don't know if anyone out there has had to look at reporters' transcripts before, but it's really, you can't just turn to the middle of the book and hope you can find the person you're looking for.
No, you got
to
scan it. It's so.
Once they call someone to the stand, their name is there. And then after that, it's just QA, QA, QA. And I, in the middle of it, I was looking at these books for 4.5 hours on Monday. I was like, who is producing this event?
This needs to be workshopped.
this script needs to be edited.
There's a good core there, but you need to pare it down and you need to get a little bit more specific in terms of the character motivations.
Jobs.
Yeah, right.
Day jobs.
The jobs.
Yeah, yeah. We hate them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Us artists.
Yes.
Us tragedians.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you guys just been making. You guys been making any theater recently? You been doing anything?
Yes, and I'll hype it more when we do our LA spotlight. But I've been working on this TGNC reading festival that's going to be happening September 28th. Thursday is the opening night through October 1st. You can check out tickets and schedules at sacredfools.org.
But now, it's is TGNC trans and gender nonconforming?
Correct.
Got
yes.
it. Okay.
And so it's primarily, in fact, it's entirely trans and non-binary. We're doing it in collaboration with Rainbow Entertainment, who runs the Act Now acting class, which is at the Broadwater. And again, all trans and non-binary students. And so when we sat down to have the meeting, we were like, okay, like if we need to cast any cis people, and Jace, who's with Rainbow Entertainment, basically went, well, y'all have been playing us forever. Why can't we play you? And I'm like,
absolutely
done. So, you know, it's exciting. We're going to have over 40 actors, directors, and writers, trans, non-binary artists who get to have this voice and get to have 4 days of telling stories about and for themselves. And it's
Maddox,
gonna be really fun.
And Natalie are gonna be there, right?
Maddox Pennington is gonna have the opening night show, friend of the pod, and then Nicole Dressel is gonna be doing a reading of her new play, Granny.
I read that one during quarantine. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a lot of poetry and cool stuff like that. And yeah, so I've been, you know, just, you know, really mostly just doing schedules and getting stuff printed and making sure people are in the right place at the right time and making sure there's music stands and all that. But I love it. And I feel really honored to be able to do this small, stupid thing, you know, in terms of offering a space and a little bit of money to you know, give voice to those that are just under fucking represented.
Hell yeah.
Yup.
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 So, yeah, come on out and see it. Come on out.
I'm still doing Maven, admin Maven for Trav.
Right
for this project. I got to build some calendars this week, but I'm very excited.
What? You're doing what? For what?
I'm the admin maven for
admin maven.
I'm just doing calendars and projected budgets and
For what? You didn't
for
say
Trav. For Travis.
Oh, for Travis.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, not everyone knows who that is.
Oh, good friend of the pod, Trav. We did an artist spotlight on him and he joined us for all of our Brecht episodes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I have opinions on that project, but I'll save them for not on the podcast.
Oh, well, okay. I'd love to talk to you about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just helping them build calendars and budgets. I'm not doing anything too hard. But then I'm mostly looking forward to fucking Mothers of God in a couple weeks.
Yeah. The Mothers of God in a couple weeks. Yep.
Yeah.
Even though you said you tried hard to make sure we didn't get cast, Bailey.
I did my best. It didn't work, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well,
you guys are making me seem like an asshole on this podcast.
No, I love you. I'm just harkening back to the text we had.
You guys
to be fair, you came and bought me drinks last night at work, and so you're good the guy.
So I'm okay.
You're okay.
You okay? Yeah. My goodness. Yeah, we're three theater makers who love each other deeply and met a long time ago, and now we'll always be bound by theater.
Yes.
And podcasting,
I guess. Speaking of, welcome. Welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
Yeah, and each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. Now, these are obviously all theater, all this Euripides shit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're less doing that, and we're more returning to our form of discussing the evolutions of the great playwrights by taking a macro look at three of their plays.
Yes.
Yeah. This is part three, the finale, three of three of our mini-series covering the works of Euripides. That's right, it's Euripides Nuts.
These nuts? Got him!
Yeah.
When I listened to Medea, I read it, and then I listened to a reading of it on Scribd, and the woman that was like the host kept calling him Euripides.
Euripides.
That's kind of cool.
She had a very soothing voice.
Roll that R.
Euripides.
Euripides.
Cool. Well, we covered Medea. Not to be confused. Now, okay, I've had multiple people in our DMs saying, where are the Tyler Perry jokes? And I'm like, here's the thing.
Yeah.
We made a couple of those jokes when we introduced it, and then we sort of decided, like, we don't need to do that again.
No.
I've also never seen any of those movies.
Well.
Is that bad of me?
No.
No. It just didn't come across. I've seen the first two. Mm-hmm. The first one's quite fun. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's brilliant and funny.
It started as stage plays. I've seen a couple of the filmed stage plays. And then I've seen, like, Medea's Halloween or, like, but the second one is called, like, Medea Boo, Medea's Halloween Boo instead of Two or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And there's Medea Goes to Jail, which I remember came out when I was working at Blockbuster, so I had to watch it. So I've seen that. The one Tyler Perry movie that does have a Medea character but is not the same Medea. It is, it's, like, spelled differently, and it's, like, whatever, but she's still, like, the matriarch of the family and is played by a woman, is This Christmas, which is a phenomenal movie. That movie. Okay. Chris Brown's in it. But besides that, it's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one I always sort of stand up for. But there are ones that people say are, like, you know, top-tier comedies. I've just never engaged with a lot of them.
Yeah. All right.
But I don't know that they're for us, and that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. But no Medea jokes is the point. No Tyler Perry. We moved on from that. And then we did Elektra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Jennifer Gardner Marvel movie from 2003. And then we did...
with a cameo from Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck. CJ, did you see The Flash?
I didn't, because that's the guy that's in trouble all the time right now, right? The guy
Grindelwald. I watched it on HBO rather than paying it for it, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I have not. No, I
didn't.
You
don't need to be clear.
Don't.
It's currently ranked at the bottom of my list so far this year, and I've seen like 50 movies already.
Of course you have.
So it's like all the way at the bottom, right? Yeah, it's like Fast X than that. Okay. And I'm a huge Fast and Furious fan, so that tells you something if I didn't like Fast X.
Yeah.
But I was going to bring it up just because Ben Affleck is still Batman in that universe. Or is he?
Oh.
But it was sort of like, or is he? Yeah. But it was a bad movie, and you don't have to. That's
okay.
why I brought it up. but this week we're covering Trojan Women. This was CJ's pick.
No, yeah. Madea was my pick.
What was this? My pick?
I think it was your pick.
I think it was my pick. I think it was my pick. So we're doing Trojan Women by Euripides. And
Euripides.
I'm excited to talk about it. I've been in this one, so I have a little closer context to it, but I didn't remember it at all.
Mm-hmm. It's an Aftermath play. You love Aftermath, Bailey.
I do, which is why I think I liked it this time. It was fun. But let's get into it. Real quick, had y'all read this before? Had you seen it? Had you anything?
I had never seen it. I had read it. Okay. In college. I remember specifically being assigned it and having a test on it and reading it, but had no memory of it per se. And again, I've never seen a production of it. But I really, really had a good time. I really had a cool experience while reading it that I can't wait to talk about.
For sure.
Yeah. Siege?
Nothing. Never. Never,
no,
ever.
No. All right.
No experience with this whatsoever. And I thought it was just fucking sad the whole time while I was reading it.
Oh, it is sad.
It's sad, to be sure.
It's bleak. It's a bleak one. Yeah.
I think that it was, and not to tip my hand to a later segment in the episode, but it might have been my least favorite of the three plays that we read, but the most intriguing to me on a kind of... philosophical meditation like thing, and I'll get more into it later.
I was definitely getting some hints, especially because I went back and listened to the Electra episode, and I was turning over some thoughts in my head of things I was working through in that episode, and I think I'm wondering if Euripides is having some hot takes in
I think we answer a question that we posed in the first episode, which is, was he a proto-feminist? And I think by the end of this, I think he decidedly is, at least in terms of recognizing the differences between men and women and the oppression and the pain that women often have to endure in our society.
Which, by
and
the way,
2,000 years later, still do.
True. Yeah, but we sort of posed that question in the last episode, like, what are the gender politics? Or maybe we did it in Madea. We were sort of like, what are the gender politics at the time? I had never really looked into it or studied it or anything. I did a very brief Google, okay? And really, almost everything is sort of like, well, you're in the time of Plato and Aristotle. And though they were compassionate towards women, the Aristotle quote, women are unfinished men, gives us the basic idea, right? There is that bit of like, it is the beginning of patriarchy in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm sure it was.
Well, I mean, definitively. And in this play in particular, the women are property. They're property of their fathers, and then they're property of their husbands. And then if they don't have either of those, they're property of their brothers. Like,
And then they're just passed along when all those guys are
passed
dead.
Along, yeah, you know, And the most simple setup of this play is, what if all the men are gone?
Yeah.
Then, you know, where are we at? And it's...
Then we're at Godless.
Well,
sure.
Mary from Downton Abbey and Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, and they're all coming from... Yeah, you know, like I said, Aristotle is the most quoted of this kind of time in terms of his gender... feelings on gender or whatever it may be, but like a couple other, here we go. In Politics, he wrote, as regards the sexes, the male is by nature superior and the female inferior, the male ruler and the female subject. The slave is wholly lacking the deliberative element. The female has it, but lacks authority. The child has it, but is incomplete. So...
Yeah.
And my hot take is something different, actually. So
you what?
We got shit to talk about.
What'd you say?
My hot take is different. It's outside of the gender realm. It's something else.
Right. So I think what's kind of amazing about these three plays and all of the Dionysia in general is I think what was happening a lot of the time was a provocative discussion about what was going on in the higher-ups, mm-hmm. right? And I think this play and the other two, but especially Medea and this one, I do think are going against the... I don't know. Again, I could be wrong. I wasn't there. We don't have these original texts, which right. we looked that up too. We don't have these original texts.
No. Right.
None of them exist.
Right.
We were
right.
sort of like, maybe there's a couple like old transcripts. There's not. It's all been copied and copied and copied. Like we've never, mm-hmm. we've yeah. never held these things. Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, I do think this is the turnkey in some ways for sort of proof positive that the art of the time was outwardly opposing a lot of the problems of the time. And I think this is mm-hmm. this is the one about war. Mm-hmm. And Medea is sort of the one about sort of about gender and about, you know, class.
Motherhood and class.
And motherhood
yeah.
and like all these other things. Elektra is maybe more of just a revenge tale, but using a woman as the story guide, as the vehicle, mm-hmm. is kind of profound, mm-hmm. right?
And so, her target is right. also, yeah.
female. Right. So, all that to say, I do think we, to answer that question from the first day, I do think the artists of this time are pushing against what Aristotle and maybe, you know, the patriarchy is building at this time. I want to believe it. Whether it's yeah. true or not, I want right, to believe
yeah,
it.
Yeah, isn't that yeah. kind of what art has always done?
Yeah, and that's the
yeah.
hope.
Well, that's, yeah, that's the hope. That's yeah, the that's what we'd like to think we do.
Right. Yeah, and I think Euripides in particular seem to be, based on the biography that we have of him, kind of the weirdo amongst the weirdos. Like, the dude ended up retiring and moving to a cave. I'm going to live in a cave.
Right.
Like he seemed to be the one who was maybe the most subversive and maybe the one who enjoyed being the most subversive. Like, ah, you're cool, bro, but you know, yeah. I'm going to undercut that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is definitely an anti-war play, I would argue.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is his Full Metal Jacket. This is his, you know, come and see or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, this is his, like, let me show you how fucked up this is. Let me show you these victims of this horrible shit.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I don't know. I liked this play a lot, and I have been in it.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that.
I was
in Trojan Women. I was Menelaus
mm-hmm.
in college. Now, I've told this story before. I won't relive it, but I was supposed to direct Everyman, and it got pulled from me because of an interaction with about a paper that whether or not it was finished mm-hmm. or not. And they pulled it from me. And we ended up doing Trojan Women instead. And so this has always had that little place in my heart of like that fucking piece of shit Trojan Women instead of Everyman. But after rereading it, I actually really liked this piece. I read a translation by Nicholas Rudall. It's part of the Plays for Performance series. And it's very much, it reads like a college translation. Like it's okay. just straight up so literal. But what did you guys interact with? Like, what were your translations like?
Mine was pretty straightforward. I can't remember. It was on Scribd was the one that I read. And I'm sorry, I don't recall. I should have.
I don't know if we
it,
read the didn't. Same one because there was a couple different ones in there. But mine was Russell Vandenbroek from the prose translation of S.A. Barlow.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite possible.
The other two that I read, the other two translations I read felt more grandiloquent or like felt like more they had, they were playing with it more maybe. This one felt so literal. This okay. translation was just so like, hello, I am Menelaus. I am sure. the king. I am, you know, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But it's good. I think it's good for a modern audience, you know, to just kind of have it handed to them.
Yeah.
But we didn't do a whole lot of theatricality with our production, so I'm sure it was more about the text than about anything.
Sure.
But yeah, Menelaus, one scene.
Hell yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. yeah.
One scene.
Oh,
scene.
I'd like it to have seen that. I wish I would have seen it.
Y'all want to know what it's about?
23. No.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine.
No, fine.
Hey.
It's getting kind of heated.
Break it down.
CJ's breakdown.
The ruined queen Hecuba and the women of the city lament the death and ruin of their city and families, their fate as slaves, and discuss how massively fucked over they've been due to the Trojan War. We also get the passing and placing of blame, and you guessed it, more filicide.
Yay.
Can I say, like, a couple years ago, I don't even know what brought it up, but I was Googling one night the different titles for different kinds of murders.
Uh-huh.
So you've got matricide and patricide, mom and dad. You've got fratricide, which is brother. Do you know what it is when you kill your sister?
What?
Sororicide.
Oh, it is sororicide. Yeah, I have heard that, yeah. Sororicide.
Cool.
It just sounds so silly and cute.
Sororicide.
Sororicide.
I like it.
Yay.
I also wanted to mention, as far as, like, paganism goes, we picked like three really good plays. They cover the three stages of woman in paganism. You've got the maiden, which is Electra. You've got the mother, which is Medea. And you've got the crone, which is Hecuba.
Sure.
So I thought that was cool. We picked that.
I think that's from Game of Thrones.
No.
That is
the mother,
from
maiden, and the crone.
I mean, those are in Game of Thrones.
I'm joking, of course. But yeah, yeah, you know what struck me about halfway reading? I'm almost embarrassed to say it. Going, oh yeah, the Trojan War wasn't a real thing. It's right. It is mythological. There are archaeologists who believe that it may have been based on sort of a root battle that existed, you know, but would have existed like during the Bronze Age, like 1500 years before Euripides wrote it. So,
but this is based in truth. So during this, it was 415 BC when this was produced at the Dionysia.
Mm-hmm.
It was during the Peloponnesian War.
Yes.
And during that time, about a year before this, Athens had captured the Aegean island of Melos. And Melos was sort of a neutral war. Like, they weren't on either side of the war. They were kind of this neutral thing. And the men basically went there, killed all of the men, and enslaved the women, and brought them back to Athens. Yeah. A lot of people were pissed about it.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
It'd be like if America did that, which they do all the time. They do shit like that all the time. And we'd be all like, what the fuck? But there's nothing we can do.
Right.
We're just the citizens.
We're not in charge of the military.
Yeah.
Right. And so artists were, at the time, were writing a lot of stuff like this that was in commentary to that. So that doubles down to me on what the role of artist was in ancient Greece. They are really ripping apart and doing takedown pieces of what they feel like is being done wrong by the government or whatever.
Well, and I also thought... I also thought, too, like, there could have been a fair amount of patriotic Athenians that were pissed off by this play.
Sure. Like,
oh, yeah.
Sure. Because
technically the Athenians, I mean, geographically, the Athenians would have been the aggressors, even though they weren't called Athenians in the fight.
Well,
right?
No, but make it America instead of Athens, right? Just
sure.
for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be people mad on both sides for whatever, because there are going to be people who, no matter what, support the military and the government and whatever they decide, and this is our land, and, you know.
They probably weren't at the Dionysia, though. They probably didn't enjoy the arts.
I was going to say, but I don't think those were the people going to the Dionysia, and if they were, they probably were angry. There were riots at Dionysias. There were, you know, people got pissed at stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We brought up, I just wanted to, because I just, it's kind of interesting. Trojan Women was the third tragedy of a trilogy dealing with the Trojan War that had been written by, like, anyone. So this was something but Alexandros was the first one about the Trojan prince, Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then you had the second tragedy, Palamedes, or Palamedes, or something like that, which is the mistreatment of Palamedes, the person. And then this trilogy with Trojan War, all three of these were presented at a Dionysia with Sisyphus, which was his comic satyr play.
Yeah.
Oh, we were discussing that last week a little bit.
By the way, a satyr, we only barely touched on it, but I wanted to get more specific because I looked it up a little bit more. It was usually between shows,
mm-hmm.
and they were short, and they would usually be the same characters or close to characters you had seen earlier in the night,
mm-hmm.
and they'd be like a farce version of it or a satire version.
A little
of
breather.
It. Yeah, and it'd be sort of like, also, here's the funny version of Trojan Women. You know, like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
But Sisyphus was the one that
I'd want to see the funny
this.
Version
no,
of this.
No, there's no funny version. That's off. I don't know why I said that.
Yeah.
Oh, here's this stat. I forgot that I wrote this down. Most Greek plays have been lost, the original plays themselves. Of more than 300 known tragedies, only 30 complete plays survived.
Holy
wow,
shit.
Yeah.
6 by Aeschylus, 7 by Sophocles, and 18 by Euripides.
Euripides!
Yeah, he was a sad boy. He wrote sad stuff.
He was a sad boy.
It makes me wonder if the fucking Catholic Church is sitting on a couple of them in Rome right now.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's storm
the Roman
Vatican,
Empire.
Y'all.
Yeah. Have you guys seen that trend? It's on TikTok and otherwise of like, women will ask their husbands or boyfriends how often they think of the Roman Empire. Have you seen
that? I saw someone comment about this today, but that's all I've seen.
I don't fully understand it because what happens in almost every video, what happens is she'll walk up and it'll be candid. She'll walk up, hey, how often do you think of the Roman Empire? And usually the guy is like, oh, all the time. Twice a week. Or what's the better ones are when they go, they go, what are you talking about? No, that's an insane question. And then they'll like finally get them to answer like, okay, but how many times, like a month? And they'll be like, I don't know, 12? And you're like, wait, what? I'm like, I never think about it. Like, what are you talking about? I mean, I guess it comes up like in theory, but like not multiple times a month. I don't know. I don't think about it that often. I don't know.
That just reminds me of a couple years ago. I think it was Jimmy Kimmel or something, and it became a viral thing where it was the day after Halloween, taking a video of your kids telling them that you got really hungry the night before and ate all the Halloween candy.
That was fucked up. That was not a cool trend. I hated that trend.
Oh, man.
I would
harsh.
Never do that to Grogu, to my daughter. I never would. I swear. That shit's fucked up and will, I think, actually could traumatize the children. I actually believe that.
All right, fair enough.
And there's this one now, too, on TikTok. Sorry to digress.
No.
This is all interesting. There's another one too where parents have started cracking eggs on their kid's head.
Oh, now that's mean.
That's mean.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
And could actually hurt. Like I did it to myself the other day to like test it. I was like, that fucking hurt.
Yeah.
And I barely did it.
I mean, unless you take it and like smash it on their head, but then your hand hurts.
You're just smashing your child's head.
That's fucked up.
Don't smash
some
your
people,
child's
I think
head.
Some people have kids so that they just have someone smaller than them to bully.
To bully. Honestly, TikTok would make you feel that even more. It would reinforce that feeling completely. Because it's just a bunch of parents making really bad content with their children. So, or abusing them, you know, that happens a lot too.
Listen.
Okay. We should talk about Trojan Women.
Yes, let's do it.
Was in the play, didn't remember it all, read it, and then started like remembering things. But then I started realizing like I didn't pay attention during this show. I had one scene, so I sat backstage and dicked around.
Bullshit, my line.
Yeah, and then I'd walk out for my little thing. And then I realized like Menelaus is the fucking worst.
Right.
And I didn't know that. I didn't know what I was doing in college when I performed it. But good role, small, but. Douche.
Yeah.
This piece kept rolling with the punches with the awesome female roles, I thought. Like, Hecuba's great.
I loved,
and maybe it's the adaptation I had, but I loved Cassandra because she's kind of always, like, pictured as this, like, wilting flower that nobody believes her, and she was rejected by Apollo, and she's doomed to never be believed. But in this, she's like, hey, motherfuckers, I know what's gonna happen, and none of you are gonna believe me, but it's gonna be fucking great, and just you wait.
Yeah.
And he wrote her well in this. Like, I mean, whoever wrote her well. I thought she was cool as shit in this.
I agree. I liked it. I really liked Hecuba. And I liked that she ends up being kind of this He uses her as a vehicle to express everything, all of his deep-seated shit. The idea that sort of clinging on to your morality, to whatever code of ethics you have, is one way to get through it. Because she's the one that keeps getting beat up the most. It keeps getting knocked down, but still holds to what she knows to be true, you know? And so I thought that was really interesting, especially in regards to the gender stuff that we were talking about, that the code, whatever you want to call it, is the thing that you reach back to and hold on to in times of horrible crisis, you know? We were talking about, you know, the aftermath. That's one of the big themes, the aftermath of war, the tragedy, which is something that most Americans never have had to contend with. You know, World War II, we never have had that here.
It's never been on our soil.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I was talking
to... Civil War, guys, come on.
Right. Well,
I was there for
yeah,
that.
But within any of our sort of contemporary memories.
Oh, okay.
But
well,
like, you know...
You weren't there, but I was.
But like, you know, Europeans, you know, you talk to Germans who were born after 1950, you know, the baby boomers of Germany, like that was a whole different thing. That was 30 or 40 years of rebuilding that whole continent for all intents and purposes. And, and you can just, and that's one thing that comes across so well is that, you can smell the smoke. You can smell the sort of rot that's going on throughout this play.
And sure.
It makes it really compelling.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the grayness of it all. And then also kind of like another thing of aftermath, forgetting the physical stuff and the injury and the death and all that stuff, is all of these women who physically had nothing to do with this war, the way that they're passing blame around to one another. And then when they trot Helen out, I'm like, here we go. I'm ready for this. What the fuck is she going to say?
Right.
And then she makes it even more gray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I just, I'm on heck. I mean, you feel bad for all of them, but like, I felt bad for Helen too. Like it's all very gray and that's what makes it even more tragic, you know?
It does, and it sort of, it reminds me, that's a great way to put it, Siege, because it reminds me of, I brought up earlier a couple of anti-war movies, right? Like Come and See and Full Metal Jacket, things like this. Full Metal Jacket actually is closer to what this is, in my opinion, which is, it's not an anti-war play or an anti-war movie. It is presenting it in truth.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that, now obviously this, the Trojan War, you know what I mean? They're presenting it in truth.
This
as
is what
a
it looks like afterwards, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that makes it just as anti-war as something that is touting, like,
oh,
look how bad this is. This is just showing it.
Yeah, Platoon.
Right? It's bleak.
Platoon does
Platoon.
The same thing in a slightly different way, but
exactly.
You know, it's distinctly an anti-war
it's
movie.
It's bleak, it's agonizing, and it adds all of this sort of, like you say, grayness to everything. Because you're just like, well, obviously I don't like this, but I guess they have to fight to make this happen. I don't like this part either. Yeah.
It also kind of twists the Agamemnon knife, too.
Sure.
Where it's like, you know, you want to make Clytemnestra the villain in Electra, but now, like, look at what he fucking did. And then on top of it, he's a double child murderer because he kills Andromache's son. That's his order to do it. So it's like, maybe Agamemnon wasn't such a great guy.
You know, and I would like to, I'd like to read it's Aeschylus who wrote Agamemnon, right?
Yes.
I'd like to read that. I never have. And see how you could potentially piece things together. You know, these are short enough that you could put two or three of these together and create kind of a real trippy weekend, matinee, double performance, triple performance.
But even
thing.
Like, I feel like they're small enough. You could even make like a 3-act show out of three of
you
them.
You could if things moved.
You make it really move. You do a bit of trimming where needed, but mostly you wouldn't have to. And you just make it click. And I think it could work. I agree with you.
Yeah. And I think it would be interesting. Because, like, I wrote down, I was like, okay, so technically this play would come before Electra. But I'm like, I think it's more interesting if you experience Elektra first and then you see this.
Oh, wow.
Personally.
Interesting. That'd be kind of cool.
And for the record, every time I think of Agamemnon, I just think of that actor that played him in the Troy that Brad Pitt was it. It's the guy that plays Stryker in X-Men.
Oh,
plays Menelaus, and it's Brian Cox, isn't it?
I thought he played Agamemnon in that.
Oh, maybe he does. I thought he was Menelaus.
Yes, and he's fucking crusty old grouchy Murdoch guy in Succession.
Correct. Yeah, Brian Cox. Yeah. Top tier.
Yeah, Brian
Cox. We love Brian Cox.
The original Hannibal Lecter.
Every time I think of Agamemnon, I think of him.
Manhunter.
With his big, stupid wig he had on for that movie.
Because he's great.
Man, by the way, Manhunter... Fucking great flick.
Oh, I love Manhunter.
Not enough people know about
it. That's Michael Mann, right?
Yeah. That's early Michael Mann. Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Holt McInerney?
Yeah. Going back to Full Metal.
Just kidding.
Going back to Full Metal Jacket, and it's a great reference to Paul Bailey, because I kept thinking about the madness of it. The chaos of Trojan Women, the chaos of war, and the chaos of the aftermath of war, but also how that kind of plays into, you know, these secondary themes about fate and destiny and Cassandra not being able to be believed, and you have the gods are all out of whack, and they're you know, humanized and personified, and it's just it's a really interesting plan. Is a lot you could do with it as a director. I would love to direct this one.
Yeah. And to piggyback on top of that, the hot take I was getting from Euripides with this is I think it's an indictment on the gods or even just religion itself. Because I was thinking back to the quote I read last week for Elektra, frightening tales are useful. They promote reverence for the gods. It also makes people do cruel, stupid fucking shit. Religion does, and gods do. And I feel like this is... Because he mentions it, gods make poor allies. They are unreliable. That was in it. The gods amount to nothing. Mm-hmm. Only those who are dead have seen the end of war. And it made me, it made me wonder if he was just like an angry atheist that was like, don't you people see what you're doing to one another the name of something that might not even be there?
Right. Maybe. No, or even just an angry artist, like outside of atheism, if he's sort of like, because I don't even know. I'm sure there was people who were atheists at the time. I don't know how that works. But I even wonder if it is more just like as an artist being sort of against it all. Like whatever it may be. Yeah, your religion, your society, your bullshit. I'm going to write about it. Yeah. I agree. I think there's some tones of that in here.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
I kind of love the... What, Scott? What were you going to say?
Oh, no. CJ pretty much said it. Please go ahead.
No, I think it's interesting. We've brought this up on the other two episodes, but this one I think is the most this way, where you kind of have to know other stories for some of these things to hit. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to know the Odyssey.
Right.
You have to. Like, there's, or at least, like, the Iliad, or, like, you know, the basic idea of the Trojan War. You have to know it going in.
Sure.
And a contemporary audience would have.
Exactly. And it's, to me, it's so interesting to think of these as we talked about Marvel or Star Wars or whatever. It's a franchise, right? And all these people are building their different franchises, and some of them take off and some of them don't. Euripides was somebody who didn't fuck with he didn't like tying trilogies together. Everybody else, Sophocles and you know, the Orestia and all that stuff by was that Aeschylus, were all so tied together. It was like, you know, characters crossing over and stuff. Sometimes Euripides, if he had a character crossover, he'd be like, I'm gonna write this character totally differently. I'm gonna make this a totally different person, and they can't be played by the same person, you know, like Ben Affleck multiple times as this Pat dude. And I think that's kind of cool, and it's just so funny. We talk about the cyclical nature of everything, but like of art, and how we are back to that. Everything we do now is like is trying to be James Bond. How do we continue this without the same actor? How do we making money from this same thing? And his may not have been money driven. It might have been, you know, how do I keep getting the juices out of this story or whatever it may be. But I don't know. I just think it's interesting. I wanted to bring that up.
And in the same vein of that, of everything's a circle, you could take this fucking play, put any fucking war in front of it, and play it.
Yeah,
like,
which opens it up to diversity, which opens it up to so much. Like, there's a ton of fun stuff you can do with it, and a fun play. I say fun. I don't mean to make light of it.
It could be
but,
fun as a theater artist. I think it could be fun.
Yeah. Oh, man. How weird. You could do a Star Wars version of it.
I'd watch it.
I'm always down for
Star
that.
I'd watch version it. Of it. Yeah, the Sith and the... Yeah. I also love all the names in this one. We've had some good names in the other two. This one
man,
had the
I,
best
okay,
name.
Go ahead. Yes. I had a hard time.
Neoptolemus?
Yeah, with Jack and... I get that they're cool. I just had a hard time tracking them through.
You've got Andromache. You've got... Achilles and Andromache's son Neoptolemus, they say at one point. You have Talthybius.
Mm-hmm.
You have Astyanax.
Oh, I looked it up.
Astyanax.
Here it is. I know how to pronounce it. I looked it up.
Okay, let's give it to us.
Where'd it go? Oh, show me. Oh, it's
Astyanax.
Astyanax.
I like it.
Yeah.
Astyanax.
Astyanax is what this Astyanax. Thing is saying. Yeah.
And then you Astyanax. Have the ones that we all know, you know, that are always
Hecuba. What is Hecuba
dope.
To him?
Clytemnestra is a cool name. Yes. We always love.
Poseidon, Athena.
Someone's got a place. Poseidon. You got a King Priam in there. Yeah, it's just Ajax. We love Ajax.
Ajax!
He's not a very nice guy, but
no,
he's got
not,
a good
but
name.
We like the name.
Good name.
Yeah.
Good name.
There's a lot of translations of this one.
Mm-hmm.
A ton. There's even a comic book made out of Trojan Women. I think it's kind of a graphic novel that people really love.
That kind of done in response to 300, I heard?
No.
I think it was
That's
later. It's like 2020. It's like pretty recent. It was like, but people really loved it.
Okay.
I guess I could click on it.
Which, by the way, I fucking love 300. It's one of my favorite movies. 300 and Gladiator, the sword and sandal movies. I love them.
Wow.
I love Gladiator. I think 300 is the most forgettable film. I think it's so forgettable.
I loved it.
I think I'm right in between you two.
Gotcha.
I like it. And like anytime that it's on, I kind of go, yeah, I'm going to watch 300 for a little while.
Yeah.
Listen.
I want to kiss Xerxes.
Xerxes.
You know,
he's
Zack,
hot.
Zack Snyder.
I'd got cock on Xerxes' cock. I would.
Zack Snyder has the ability to create some very cool visual moments. Whether he strings them all together well,
I think Watchmen is a better looking movie than 300. And I think Watchmen looks like shit.
Oh no. Okay.
The movie Watchmen, not the show Watchmen, obviously.
No. Oh, God, no.
I just think 300 looks bad. I think Sin City looks bad. But I like Sin City,
all
so
right.
I don't know.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Peace.
Sin City's interesting. I don't know why I said it looks bad. It doesn't look bad. It looks interesting. It's got its moments. I don't know why I said that. Okay.
It's very... When was the last time you watched it, though?
A long time ago. Like, high school.
It does not hold up well. Like, the misogyny in it...
Yeah.
Gets... It honestly is too much sometimes. Like... You know.
I just remember Frodo Baggins being like a little creature that bites people's faces off. Remember that?
Yeah.
Elijah Wood is like this really creepy, like no line character role that's just like has shiny glasses and like.
Have you seen the trailer for Swamp Thing?
Yeah.
With him and Dinklage?
That's exciting.
Yeah, dude. We're going.
I'm sorry. That's exciting.
Sorry.
That's
digression.
Really cool. Speaking
digression.
Of DC, let's talk about The Flash some more. So the final moment of Flash is maybe my favorite part of any movie ever. Okay.
Not true.
I'm not going to give it away, but it's amazing. There's some film adaptations of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a Mexican film in 1963.
It's supposed to be quite good.
People love it. It's by Sergio Vejar, and it's apparently super faithful to the Greek text, and it's called Los Troyanos, 1963. You have Michael Kakayanis, who made a 1971 film, The Trojan Women, with Catherine Hepburn as Hecuba.
All right.
Wow.
It was a Greek film, but she was Hecuba. And then you had Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh, right. Yeah, there were some heavy hitters in that.
Brian Blessed as Talthybius.
Wow.
Vanessa Redgrave was Andromache. You had Genevieve Buhold as Cassandra. Irene Pappas as Helen. This is crazy, actually. And then I've never seen it. Menelaus. Yeah,
Patrick McGee.
Patrick McGee.
Oh man, Patrick McGee made the greatest TV show of all time.
Which is what?
The Prisoner.
Oh, okay. I just know him from Marquis de Sade and Barry Lyndon.
Oh right.
Yeah. Oh, wait, he's in Clockwork Orange.
Oh no, I'm thinking somebody else, not Patrick McGee.
Oh okay.
I'm thinking.
No, Patrick McGee is, he's, I mean,
yeah, I know exactly who Patrick McGee is.
He was a Beckett Pinter actor.
Yes,
like,
he was the guy, he did the original Crap's Last Tape. Crap's Last Tape was written for him.
He was considered Beckett's favorite actor, and that's according to Beckett.
He's like, that's amazing, amazing face, like just an amazing old man face.
This is Mary Louise Parker for you.
Correct. She's not my favorite actress.
Are you a reincarnation after Beckett?
Let's be clear. Mary Louise Parker is not my favorite actress. She is the only star I have ever seen perform on stage. Like, true, like, you are a movie star. There is nothing denying it. It's her. I know, CJ gets jealous when I say that. I just see her face crinkle up, and I'm like, yeah. I've only seen you in one play, CJ, and it wasn't very good. I gotta be honest. And you were great, but the play was not. It was called Three Guys, One Groupon. No, I'm talking about the other one. Okay, so there was also a novel by Sherry Tepper that wove the story of the Trojan women. This is 1988. It wove the story of the Trojan women into her feminist science fiction novel called The Gate to Women's Country.
Ooh,
sounds good.
Let's adapt that for the
sounds
stage.
Good.
Women's Country.
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 Country. There's been a shit ton of stage productions of this that new translations, or they warped it in some way or reconceptualized it. I'm just going to mention a couple that I thought were interesting. There is a Royal Court Theater in London in 1905 does the first major production of it outside of, the Greek tradition.
They did the first revival of it.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. starring Gertrude Kingston as Helen and Ada Farrar as Athena. And then the French public intellectual, Jean-Paul Sartre.
Ouais.
All right.
Oui.
I read my belly pock Paris shit.
Yeah? I was in No Exit in college.
I love No Exit.
It's a good one. But he wrote a version of the Trojan Women in 1965 that is mostly faithful, but includes this veiled reference to European imperialism in Asia.
Okay.
Right on, bro.
That's cool.
It's kind of existentialist because it's Sartre.
That's fucking cool as shit.
Sounds dope. Mm-hmm. There's a Israeli playwright who wrote The Lost Women of Troy, which is like a bit more disturbing and scatological. Apparently, it's like a little bit more like intense, this is already pretty intense. I don't know. Mm-hmm. In 1974, Ellen Stewart, who founded the La Mama Experimental Theater Club in New York, presented the Trojan Women as a trilogy with Medea and Electra.
All right.
So
cool.
We picked it.
We picked it.
That's our season. That's what we're doing. That's our season.
It sounds like this would have been the second one. So it would have gone Electra, Trojan Women, and ended with Medea. Sounds kind
of
cool. That's not correct in terms
Medea's
of
Medea's your headliner. You probably do want to put that on the end anyway.
Yeah, I think it's more of a thematic trilogy.
That's an interesting proposition. I would build it more. I would probably go Electra, Medea, Trojan Women in terms of building intensity and epicness.
Yeah,
but,
maybe.
Man, what do I know?
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you know?
What do you know?
Nothing. Because I'm a man, right, CJ?
Correct.
Wow, she just bit her lip. Literally.
There's a Trojan Woman. It's a play by Charles L. Mee, M-E-E. From 1994, it's called Trojan Women, A Love Story. And he made it more modern, updated the outlook on war, and then included interviews from the Holocaust and Hiroshima.
Whoa.
Boo.
Survivors.
That's intense.
And I was like, fuck,
that's what you're talking about.
Those are the settings you should be looking at.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. David Studdard did a 2001 adaptation right after 9/11. It is a pure 9/11 aftermath play. It was staged all over the world. He also put it up in the trilogy with Alexandros and Palamedes, which was the original way it was presented, so that's kind of cool. There's a few others. Women of Owu in 1821 was a West African version of it.
That'd be cool.
Brad Mays directed a multimedia production for the Arc Theater in Los Angeles in 2003.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember this.
Apparently, this was a big deal. It opened with a faux CNN TV news report that was echoing the current war in Iraq, sort of. So they made it very that. There was a documentary made of that production that was released in 2004, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd like to watch that, actually. It's kind of
Cool.
There's 100 others. There's the National Theater version. There's the Stratford Shakespeare Festival version. There was one other I wanted to make sure I said. Anne Bogart did one at the Getty in L.A. There was the other one that was really interesting. Oh, here we go. This is the graphic novel. I wanted to bring this up. So I already brought it up, but I wanted to tell you more. Anne Carson is an experimental poet from Canada, and she published Trojan Women, a comic with illustrations by Rosanna Bruno, all-female team, rad, a portion of which was excerpted earlier that year in the 236th issue of the Paris Review.
Ooh, well.
Wow.
She took a stage production she had seen of it and made it a graphic novel with the characters cast as uncanny figures. So, like, Hecuba was an old dog. Hmm. And the goddess Athena is a pair of overalls wearing an owl mask.
Oh, all right.
And the murdered baby Astyanax, is that what we
said? Astyanax.
Astyanax is just a poplar tree sapling.
Wow.
Okay. Sounds good.
Do they cut it down?
Probably.
Yeah.
Sounds really sad and awful. I just thought that was interesting. There's just so many different versions of this. There's 100 translations. This may be more so than the other two. Medea has a lot.
Yeah.
Elektra does not. Elektra has very few. But this is definitely the most pop culture forward, I would say. Like, it's been in more movies, novels, graphic novels. Medea, there haven't really... I mean, Medea's, there's been a couple, but Elektra, there's been no movies. I think there was that one from the 60s or something like that.
Trojan Women is definitely a timely, timeless story. I mean, we're still doing it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the other thing that, after reading these three plays, in my dark times after reading them, I'd be like, why haven't we figured out a better way to do things? Like, it just made me double down on being a pacifist. Like, why do we have to oppress people and treat people like shit and take their stuff? Like, we haven't figured out a better way to do shit still.
Agreed. There's a great acting, or a great writer's note from the translator in my copy. And it says, "The only justice in war, Euripides seems to say, is punitive and nihilistic."
Mm.
Wow.
And shit.
That's the heart of it, right? Is that it is an anti-war play. Like, there's really no debate here. You can debate feminism in these plays, and you can debate, like, whatever. But, like, I don't think there's any other reading of this. This is to show the cruelties, the agonizing bleak side of modern war and war in general, you know, whatever it may be. Their modern war, not our
that the winners, you know what I mean? Quote unquote, don't see.
Correct.
Yeah,
it's nihilism, because at the end, it's all bullshit anyway.
What's it good for? And for what?
That's right.
War! Dun, 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 dun.
What is it good for?
Because then the hero of the war, Agamemnon, goes home and just gets his ass killed. So,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's tough.
I'm just mad at everybody in these plays.
Me too.
All right. Yeah.
You guys got anything else you want to talk about?
No, I really, like I said, this play made me think. I'm really glad I sat down and read it and processed it and tried to get, you know, as much out of it as I could. But just revisiting the Greeks and the old Euripides there, it was, that's been cool.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be a slog. I thought I wasn't going to enjoy it at all. Mm. But I enjoyed reading each and every one of these plays. And now I'm like, maybe I need to revisit the other Greeks and see if they're not, if they're just as enjoyable too.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we did this.
Yeah.
Me too. This was fun. Euripides. Nuts.
Euripides. Nuts.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but I did put an apostrophe after the S of Euripides.
Yeah.
So it, mm-hmm. it is possessive.
Yeah.
It's not just D's nuts. It's like, it's his nuts.
It's his nuts. Yeah. Well,
he's not nuts. He himself is not crazy.
Yeah.
No.
He has some.
He has them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Testicles.
Testicles.
Tickles.
Nads. Nards.
Nards. Nards.
Say big money, Menards.
I always thought it was Maynards. And then somebody one day was like, it's Menards. And I was like, that's fucking
stupid.
Had
you never seen the commercials?
No.
I only knew it was Menards because of the commercials and the jingle.
We only have Cabela's in Kansas. We don't do Menards.
We only have Cabela's.
Yeah. We only go full redneck in Kansas. Thank you very much. I'm not proud of it. I'm not like, Cabela's only. Bass Pro Shop can suck a dick. Yeah, I don't care about that. REI is for douchebags. Okay, what else?
Do we want to do your thing? The thing you love to do?
Yeah.
I do love it.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
I love this shit. Scott, rank them.
Okay, I'm going to rank
3, 2, 1.
Okay, number 3 is going to be Electra. Number 2 is going to be the Trojan Women, and number 1 is going to be Medea.
Whoa. Siege?
I don't feel good about this at all. This is what I had written out before, but now after we've discussed it, none of it means anything to me, but I put 3 Trojan Women, 2 Medea, and 1 Electra. Wow. I think Medea is probably going to continue to live the test of time.
Yeah.
But I don't know. After we've discussed all 3 of them, like...
All right. Yeah. I think all 3 of them will.
3 Electra, 2 Medea, 1 Trojan Women.
Were we all different?
We were all different.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Because that also proves that this is... It's why it has stood the test of time, like you said. But it's also like he was creating constantly and making good shit constantly, or at least what we have, what we're able to engage with.
He could have had a Circus Valentine in there.
He might have. But those 3 were really good. I enjoyed all 3 plays because I was rolling my eyes headed into this miniseries about
me too.
We gotta read the Greeks.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
But it's not like Shakespeare. It's not. It's totally different, especially with the translations. But forget translations for a second. It really is thematically, like, so simple. And I pick up on it so quick. Trojan Women specifically is what I'm talking about. Like, I knew what it was about 5 pages in and then was with it the whole way.
Yep.
And like you said, there's so much gray area.
Mm-hmm.
And its gray area, I think, is intentional. Whereas when I read Medea, I'm like, I don't know. Is he meaning to do this? I don't know. But Trojan Women makes me think, yes, he is. But I don't know for sure. But Trojan Women was my turnkey. It was my tabla rasa for the rest of Euripides. So I, my Rosetta Stone, if you will.
Yeah.
And I will.
You like that?
I love it.
Okay. We ranked them.
Yeah.
This was fun. This was a blast. Let's spotlight some fucking.
Do we want to do dream rolls?
Oh, yeah. We haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah. It's time.
Dream rolls.
Dream rolls. my God, there's so much here. Yeah. Clytemnestra, Andromache, Hecuba, Medea, really any and all is what I wrote down.
Right.
I'd fucking take a crack at Jason.
Yeah.
Scat.
Bailey's?
I want to play Menelaus again.
Get another crack at it.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think I'd any of the kings. I'll fuck with any of the kings.
Yeah.
You know, Priam, any of it. Like, it's just, that's kind of my thing anyway. I don't know that I could fuck with anybody else. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I'm the same. I really want to, I'm more interested in directing.
Yeah.
All right.
Any of these, but specifically Trojan Women is way up there for me.
Let's do it.
All right.
After we do all of the nonsense, so I think it's like 2035 is when we can do.
Nonsense?
Yeah, no, one
not,
a year.
We're not doing any nonsense. No nonsense.
So 2035 is when we'll do Trojan Women.
Yeah. No. Okay, let's spotlight some Los Angeles theater.
Yes.
LA Spotlight.
I'll start. I'm putting up Nonsense in a couple of weeks.
No, you're not.
And I think everybody should come.
You're not doing that.
No, you're right. I'm putting up Meshuggah Nuns. And that one is going to run for 6 weeks at the Hudson.
Oh, at the Hudson.
Lies. Interesting dirty, choice. Dirty, provocative lies.
In the Guild, push buttons. At the Hudson. Yeah. No, okay. Mine is in on October 7th and 8th. There's a reading of a workshop reading of a play that I wrote with my partner Rachel. It's called Mothers of God, and it is starring C.J. Merriman and Scott Leggett.
Well,
although
in
I worked so hard to not let that happen,
we actually do theater together, y'all.
Yeah,
and we haven't in a while, so this feels good to actually do. And we all three get to be creative in it. None of us, Scott's half producing as well, but all three of us actually get to be artists and not have to support someone else's shit. Like, we're all getting to do it. It's great.
Yeah.
Feels good.
Yeah. And you can get tickets for that at sacredfools.org. It's pay what you can. All the money is just going to go to Sacred Fools Theater. So dig in and come see some theaters.
Dig it.
I've got Theater West's Walking in Space. It's through October 8th. The heartbreaking autobiographical story of four siblings trying to help their drug-addicted mother. You can get tickets at theaterwest.org.
And then to echo what we mentioned at the top of the pod, I'm producing a TGNC reading festival. It's a reading of plays, long, full-lengths, and shorts. It starts Thursday, September 28th is opening night, and then there are different blocks of programming. There's shorts, there are full lengths. You can check out more information at sacredfools.org, but it's also pay what you can, and all proceeds are divided between Sacred Fools, Rainbow Entertainment, and the Queer 26, which is a nonprofit aimed at providing multimedia education and training to the trans and non-binary community. So come on and check your stuff out.
Do it. Also, go see theater whatever city you're in.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for the end of Euripides Nuts. It was a good trilogy.
It was a great miniseries. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah. Next week, we are beginning a new miniseries within a miniseries. So every time it's Bailey's pick for the next six or seven Bailey's picks. So this will go for a while.
Yeah.
We're going to cover all of the Alan Menken Disney projects.
All right.
So the very first thing we're doing is The Little Mermaid, 1988. Or 89, one of the two.
I think it's 89.
I think you're right. Little Mermaid, we're doing the movie specifically because that's the first iteration of it, but I want to talk a little bit about the stage show, the movie that just came out, the live action, and then also the Queen Latifah live TV version.
Are there two stage versions?
They did a TV... No, there's one stage version, but they did a TV version where they showed the movie, the animated movie, and then anytime there was a song, they'd come out and do the staged version of the song.
Okay.
Queen Latifah is Ursula. The girl who played the voice of Moana is Ariel.
Cool.
And then it's Shaggy plays the crab or whatever. It's so random where you're wait, what? Okay. But it's fun. You know, it is what it is.
All right.
Cool. No, it's bad. I don't know why I said that. It's bad. But we're going to talk about all of it. So that'll be fun. And then the week after that is Scott's pick or CJ's pick. Wait.
It's Scott's pick.
Scott's pick. Scott, do you remember or do you know what you're doing?
No.
Wow.
I can't remember. I'll announce it next week.
I have an idea, but I have to clear it with the two of you.
No.
Whoa. Yeah.
You want to pitch it here or later?
Yeah, I can pitch it here. I wanted to do the two Theater Kid episodes of Pen 15.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Okay, cool.
Let's do that.
Okay, it'll be easy. I mean, it'll just be 40 rules. Minutes of television, so.
Yeah.
That's easy. That's fun. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys next week for Little Mermaid.
Can't
wait. As a concept, Little Mermaid.
It's going to be huge for me.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. I want to be where the people are. I want to
see.
Siege?
Do y'all have questions or comments? Please reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your theme song. Bitch. And Ryan is an amazing human being. And that's all you fucking need to know.
Yeah.
And then finally, to the great award-winning playwright, Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
Bitch.
I think Euripides probably talked like this.
Yeah.
I'm Euripides, and these are my nuts.
Thunk, thunk.
Thunk, thunk. Thanks for joining us. Subscribe, rate, review. It really does help, and we'll see you guys next time. Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
If someone stood up in a crowd and raised his voice up way out loud and waved his arm and shook his leg, you'd notice him. If someone in the movie show yelled, "Fire! In the second row! This whole place is a powder keg!" you'd notice him. And even without clucking like a hen, everyone gets noticed now and then. Unless, of course, that personage should be invisible. Inconsequential. Me. Sella. Mr. Cellophane should have been my name. Mr. Cellophane, cause you can look right through me, walk right by me, and never know.
Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater.